Serve It Cold, Episode 12. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios.
I am not happy with these accommodations, Edward. You will find me another hotel immediately. The guest house may be the most exclusive establishment in the French Quarter, but the hotel opposite has considerably lower standards. It casts a pall on the whole area. What do I mean by lower standards? Try blatant public drug use. Try a couple copulating on the balcony, loudly, repeatedly. It was quite offensive. Of course I shut the windows. The stench of marijuana was overwhelming. You know how it gives me migraines. No, the situation could have only been worse had the New Orleans police arrived, lights flashing and sirens blaring to deal with the disturbance. It would have attracted curious onlookers to the street, the press, photographers. Not very private. Need I say more? I tried to just close my eyes and sleep through it, but I was so very agitated. Finally, I went down to the courtyard for a nightcap and a light snack, but I found the chef, hotel security, and a rather seedy-looking gentleman carousing together. They had nicknames: Kenny G, Coleridge, Creedmoor. The latter, apparently a private investigator working a divorce case. The scene only lacked the arrival of a runaway teenager pursued by criminals to be complete. Really, Edward, these arrangements are substandard. Pity, really. The Oysters Bienville po' boys sounded delicious.
I woke up the next morning feeling like Kris Kristofferson was sitting on my chest, singing Sunday Morning Coming Down, and here it was only Wednesday. I stumbled around in my hydra-headed shower until I found a bench to slump down onto and let the various jets of water beat on me. It was certainly a different experience. Once I found the bench, I resolved to stay put until the Royal Guest House ran out of hot water. But after a while, I decided that I would run out of layers of skin before that happened, and wandered around some more until I found the door that led back to civilization. While I was drying off, the soaking tub caught my eye with its control panel that looked like it had been ripped from a small private jet, but I decided that it was a capitalist plot designed to drain away my will to resist. I wrapped my Neiman and Marcus towel around my fat butt and went to find my Walmart t-shirt. I hit the street with the cathedral bells ringing the 7:15. I called the Tommies on my cell just as I reached their building's door, so they wouldn't pour boiling oil on me as I came up the stairs. I knocked at their apartment, and the door was answered by a striking black woman of about 40, with long, straight, golden blonde hair. I was taken aback for a moment, but recovered enough aplomb to ask courteously, "Hello, can I speak to one of the Tom?" And stopped cold, because the lady was doubled over laughing, as were both Tommies who had appeared behind her. "Narlene?"
"We got you good, Jonathan, didn't we?"
Even with Narlene's voice coming from her mouth, I still had a hard time believing that this creature was actually my 19-year-old runaway. Not only did she have the wrinkles of a 40-year-old, she seemed thicker at the waist and had the complexion of a mature adult. "Tommy, this is incredible work. Why aren't you sitting in Beverly Hills, man?"
"I've been telling you I'm a genius for years, little John."
"We thought that if we disguised her well enough, even a wicked old witch like you would allow fair Rapunzel down from her balcony today."
"Well, there's no question that she's well disguised." Suddenly, Tommy whirled around and shouted,
"Oh, no!"
I turned back toward the door, ready for attack. Behind me now, Tommy continued,
"What did you do to all my beautiful gray, little John?"
Oh, no, was right. For the first time that morning, I remembered that I was supposed to be a distinguished graying gentleman. I winced and turned around again to face the music. "I'm sorry, Tommy. I got caught in a tropical storm this morning." He opened his mouth and took a deep breath, but I quickly raised my hands in supplication and tried to cut him off at the pass. Doesn't matter, though. My target got a good, long look at the gray me last night. I need you to do some more work on me this morning. And besides, I brought Kona coffee. I held up the carafe that I had found outside my hotel room door on the way out. My double-pronged attack was successful, and I was soon ensconced in the green Emil J. Pidar, with both Tommies whacking away at my head. At least, I thought that I had been successful until I realized that everyone was drinking the Kona but me. Within 5 minutes, I was shaved, shorn, and slicked up. I looked into the mirror at a face that was as foreign to me as Narlene's was. My upper lip was as close to naked as it had been in 20 years. My thick brush had shrunk to Buffett's pencil-thin mustache, the Boston Blackie kind. My beard had been reduced to shadow of itself, only 4 inches at its longest, which was a ridiculous little point. My hair had just disappeared. What was left was plastered to my head with some sort of gel. Tommy, I told you I was sorry. You didn't have to take it out on my poor beard. I looked at Tommy, too. And you're going to have to answer to Vera about what you just did to my hair.
I know as well as you do that Vera has been trying to get you to cut that mess 10 years, Mr. I'm going to tell on you.
Tommy turned to Narlene.
So what do you think, Rapunzel?
Very flash. Now we need to accessorize him a bit.
I'm not doing anything before I have my first cup of coffee this morning, guys. And I don't mean a cup of that instant crap you guys keep on hand. By the way, doesn't at least one of you guys need to go to work this morning? Tommy reached behind him and brought out a mug of Kona already doctored up for me.
Just calm down. We saved just enough for your fix. And no, Tim is coming in today, so we are free to help you fight crime and shop until 2 o'clock. Aren't you the lucky one? Now just sit down and sip while we go rummage in the costume closet.
I sat and talked to Narlene with the sound of the Tommies bantering in the background. It was more than a bit strange. I felt like I was talking to someone different. Maybe Narlene's sexy aunt.
How was your night, Jonathan? Did you get your job done?
I had a great night, actually. I've got plenty of evidence to make my case. I'll probably try to get a few street shots today, then I'm through. Are you ready to go home?
I'm in no hurry. But yes, I am ready to go home. Thank you for letting me stay. I feel so much better now. Sooner or later, I've got to face Mama. I talked to Goat a little this morning. He's trying to smooth the way for me, but I got to walk that lonesome valley on my own.
Have you talked to Sonny this morning?
Yes, I talked to Sonny. He says he's doing much better and can come get me this afternoon if you need to stay down here tonight.
When we left the building, I felt naked as a cool breeze blew through my gel. I was now dressed in a silver metallic tank top over my black t-shirt. Yeah, I did win that one fight. An open pleather vest that hung down to my ass with assorted rings and medallions hung from it. Our first stop was the coffee shop next to the Royal Guest House, where we sampled some excellent pastries along with more great coffee. I stepped away from the table and dialed Sam's cell phone. It rang, and then he said, "Good morning, Johnny." But the voice came from behind me and not the cell phone. I turned to find him looking at the cell phone in his hand. Now that's what I call service. Johnny, I know we had a bit to drink last night, but I didn't think you were that drunk. Yes, Sam. I've seen the light and changed my lifestyle overnight. What do you think?
Well, I must admit, you are more recognizable from the back than from head on. You do this yourself?
No, I have neither the talent nor the balls to do this to myself. Come, let me introduce you to my friends, the Tommies. They're the culprits.
The Bubble Tommies? The guys who shoot bubbles down the street.
The very ones. Are your guests bothered by bubble shooting?
On the contrary, they love it. But I get at least one question a day about the bubbles. We see bubbles. Is there a parade coming? What do the bubbles mean? Are bubbles a French Quarter tradition?
I answered in a serious voice. Eventually, just stand here and wait. Come to our store and spend money, and, well, they're getting to be.
Very good, Johnny. I'll forward all further questions to your cell phone number.
Sam, I was calling to ask if it was all right for me to invite my friends in to check out my room.
Can they be relied upon to spread rumors of intrigue and exclusivity throughout the quarter?
Absolutely.
Then of course, Mr. Speed. The guest house is your home while you are with us.
Thank you, Samuel. Now come meet these guys. They're friends of Big John, too. Sam joined us for some coffee, and soon was trading Don Ho Tommy Bubbles jokes for Samuel Coleridge Taylor dyslexic jokes. Tommy, too, after sitting quietly for a while, asked,
"Wasn't there a Samuel Coleridge Taylor who was an English composer about 100 years ago?"
"Absolutely. My namesake. That's very good. Are you a musician?"
"Not really. I sing a bit, but my father was a really big champion of black history. The composer Taylor was also black, wasn't he? His mother was from Guinea or maybe, Liberia?"
"Sierra Leone. But that was very close. Your father was a very good teacher. My father championed black history, too. He taught history and English literature at Xavier when I was a kid, and played any instrument you could put in his hands. In our house, we listened to classical music all day and jazz all night."
"Do you play an instrument, Sam?"
"Well, if I hadn't learned at least a little piano, I wouldn't have been allowed to grow up in our house. But my real talent is playing the CD player."
As we sat and passed a good time over good coffee, I noticed that Sam was paying very close attention to Narlene. It was normal for men to pay attention to even the 40-year-old version of Narlene, but I figured that his interest was more professional than most men. He knew something was amiss with Rapunzel. After maybe 30 minutes of conversation, I saw a sudden quickening in his eye. He was confident that he had solved the puzzle. It wasn't long before I couldn't help myself. I had to know if I was right. Had he really solved the puzzle? "Sam, I've noticed you've been watching Narlene very closely."
"Well, who wouldn't? She's a very beautiful young woman. She's also a very good actress."
We four conspirators burst out laughing at that. Sam turned to Tommy.
"Did you do her makeup, too?"
"Yes, I did. How old do you think Narlene is, Sam?"
"Well, my mother may well have raised a fool, but even this fool knows better than to guess a lady's age."
"Go ahead, Sam. Be brave. I haven't threatened anybody in almost 24 hours.
"Only if you insist, my dear. Would you mind standing up and turning around while I make my deducement?"
Narlene hopped up and took a few steps toward the door. Then she swung around in her best runway pivot and stalked back toward us. I leaned toward Sam and said, "You know, lechery is unbecoming a legionnaire, Sam."
"Au contraire, Johnny. Lechery was a prerequisite back during my day."
Narlene sat back down and awaited Sam's guess.
"I would say that Miss Narlene is between 26 and 28.
Again, there was much celebration around the table. "That, my man, smacks of wishful thinking. The child is only 19.
"Almost 20,
came the inevitable retort from the other side of the table.
19? Tommy, you are indeed a master. Would you be interested in doing some occasional work for our guests? Nothing illegal, I promise, but sometimes we have guests who feel that they cannot walk the streets in anonymity. That's a mostly unfounded fear, of course. The French Quarter takes everybody but the Pope in perfect stride."
"I would be delighted, Sam. We live just down the street, and I've got 20 years worth of collecting costumes and makeup on hand."
Sam turned to me.
"Johnny, every single time I think I've figured out what you're up to, you do something that completely surprises me. I confess you've lost me."
"Well, Sam, us Catherine detectives don't just work one case. We're real multitasking sons of bitches up there, according to some people present." Narlene reddened. I continued. "Narlene, would you mind telling Sam here why you're in disguise this morning? I think he may be a big help before we're through down here." So, I heard Narlene tell her story for the third time. It was coming easier now, and it was growing funnier with each telling. I didn't know what Vera would say about this from a psychology point of view, but it seemed like nothing but good to me. Shortly before 9 o'clock, Sam excused himself, saying he had to go turn into a butler for a while. As he rose from the table, he leaned over and said,
"Don't forget to pay with your key. And Johnny, I really love your new earring."
We followed him shortly, and I got to show off my luxury suite. Everyone made appropriate noises of appreciation and awe, especially during the tour of the water sports arena. The three plotters were chomping at the bit to go shopping, so I sent them on with plans for rendezvous. Even if the two stooges did recognize Narlene, I was confident that the Tommies could take care of most situations. And I didn't think that they were very likely to run into Jerry and Ray in Macy's. I tried to give my credit card to Narlene, but the Tommies would have none of it, saying that today was their treat. Oh, great. Let's meet for lunch at the grill room, then.
That's fine with us, but we didn't say that we were going to treat you. Tommy and I will be happy to sip Perrier and watch Narlene eat, but I really don't know if they would let you in looking like that. I think that they have rule against really slimy Eurotrash.
After they left, I packed my clothes and my gear so that I could leave quickly in case I headed home today. I still hadn't made up my mind, but I was leaning heavily that way. I'd amassed a mountain of images, but last night's audio recording had once again been lousy. The most dominant sound had been the steady hammer of a street crew's two-stroke compressor. I hadn't noticed the sound at all at the time, but I had to admit it made a pretty good soundtrack for the action on the video. And besides, the Granthams hadn't done much talking last night anyway. Maybe they just weren't big talkers. I hung out on my balcony, and within 15 minutes the couple emerged from the door that led from their hotel's champagne brunch and started window shopping along Royal. Along with great pictures of French Quarter architectural details, I got plenty of pictures of the couple walking hand in hand, smooching in front of a jewelry store window and taking pictures of each other. At one time, Latimer stopped in front of a sidewalk cafe and turned to deliberately scan the crowd. My heart made a couple of kaplunks, but then he walked over and gave his camera to a man standing nearby, obviously asking him to take a picture of the couple. Latimer sat in one of the cafe's chairs and pulled Lily into his lap. While Lily made the most of her skimpy sundress's low-cut bodice, Latimer reached down and pulled the hem of her dress up higher on her thigh. After a couple of shots, the newly recruited photographer went down to one knee, and Lily reached down and pulled the dress up even higher, revealing that she had indeed packed light for this trip. The photographer reached for his own camera as a few other men started to gather, but his wife emerged from a nearby store and put a stop to his act of kindness. My favorite shot of my pictures of this little street drama is a close-up of the photographer, his eyes still locked on Lily, with his wife scowling, standing in front of him, one hand gripping his collar. No good deed goes unpunished on the streets of the French Quarter. Again, I had the feeling that this job was just too easy. After a while, I tired of the foolishly easy game, especially when I decided that Lily would probably not actually rip off her dress and walk down the center of Royal Street. I drifted slowly down to the river and across to Spanish Square. There was still a hint of coolness in the breeze coming off the river, but it was slipping away. The afternoon would be hot and still. I turned away from the river, and lo and behold, there were the Granthams again. This time, Lily was playing in the mist, blowing from the fountain in the middle of the square, letting the tiny droplets of water turn her white sundress into transparent tissue. So, okay, I might have been wrong on that last point, but in my defense, I want to point out that it was not quite the center of Royal Street. As usual, Big John had been right. Rule number one, don't never leave the dance early, Creedmoor.
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, DancingCatStudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at DancingCatStudios.com. Hey, thanks for sticking around through the credits. We've got a little something extra for you again. A little reward. In honor of Johnny C's new look for this episode, we thought you might enjoy Black Motorcycle Boots from Michelle Malone. This is another cut from her Sugarfoot album. Enjoy!
Church to go ask the preacher. I said, hey, daddy.